Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. It's absolutely gloriously, magnificently beautiful here in the Pacific Northwest. We've actually got blue skies above us. Holy Moses, we just don't know what to do with ourselves when the sun comes out like that. But I'll tell you what, it's not a problem. I really like it. We've got a delightful guest today. Her name is Gloria Burgess. We're going to be talking about daring to wear your soul on the outside. And Dr. Gloria Burgess, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Now, you are an interesting lady. Of course, you're involved in speaking, and you have worked with corporations. You like coaching people, but you founded a company called Jazz Incorporated. How did you get started with that? I love the title, but to me it's music. Then I go, jazz, okay.
Well, thank you. Well, I love music, and I think about jazz as a metaphor for the clients that I work with, Donna. Organizations are full of people, and most of them don't think of themselves as leaders, but they really do have a lot of leadership capability. And so my work with them is to help them find their place in the ensemble, so to speak, and to work with the designated leaders, the people with the titles and all of that, but also to step up and bring their gifts forward as well, bring their skills and talents forward. So that's part of the metaphor. And the other part is, you know, in jazz, the leader goes back and forth. Okay, so sometimes the trumpet takes the lead, sometimes the, you know, the drums are in the lead or the saxophone or whatever. And so it really is about being fully present and bringing all of your gifts forward, no matter who or what part you have in the ensemble.
I find it interesting when people will tell about what pushes their buttons, why they decide that they have to write their passion out. And when I was reading Angelus Aaron's statement about you, I loved the very last paragraph that she wrote. She said, "Ultimately, we have an urgent summons to rise above the weight of our personal and cultural history, to surrender whatever story we might harbor, to claim authority over our circumstances, and by doing so to transform our lives. We then offer ourselves as a legacy, as radiant story, hallowed poem, glorious song, healing stream that tenders the waters of revival, healing, and transformation." Now, that's a lot of words, but boy, she got a whole bunch into that paragraph.
She did. And, you know, so many of us, I think, walk around with the baggage from our past and really believe that baggage, you know, that past determines our future. And that's not it. My work is all about helping people realize that they can, you know, that they can get over it. Whatever the it happens to be in their life, a bad relationship, you know, bad parenting, whatever it happens to be, and leave that stuff behind and make new choices that are life-giving and that celebrate, you know, who we are as human beings. I believe that a lot of us walk around on autopilot, again, thinking about, you know, the weight of the past rather than getting over it and moving beyond it. And so my work is about transforming it and breaking through it.
Well, I'm 100% with you. I really think that that is so significant. I was working with a client today, and in the process, there was some information we were discussing, and the person said to me, "You are so deeply moved by what you are sharing with me today. Why?" And I said, "Because I find so frequently that mankind as a whole, womankind, continues to repeat the same tragedies, errors, horrors, atrocities over and over and over again. And it makes me so sad because it seems like such a waste." And what you've just expressed is so true. I look at what we've got going on in the world today, and I think This is a replay. When are people going to give up some of this drama? What is it going to take to change the script of hate, animosity, you cross this line, that line? I mean, what is it going to take? It's going to take people like Gloria Burgess to do that, because it's up to us to be present.
It really is up to us. And, you know, I believe that a lot of the stuff that we have going on in our relationships are just a little microcosm of what's going on in the bigger world around us.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, Donna, it really gets down to respect and honor and love. You know, if we can't figure out how to love ourselves, and most of us haven't figured that part out yet, then how can we expect to be in good relationships with other people, whether those people are, you know, significant others or our children or people who live 100 or 1,000 miles away. And so for me, it really is all about getting that place of honoring and respecting and loving yourself so that you can, you know, build the kind of bridges and have the kind of life-giving relationships with other people.
You talk about how things began with you. You were born and raised in a racially segregated town of Oxford, Mississippi.
Yes, I was.
And so you came into that script of experience. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that script of experience is a really good way to describe it, because I was born into a world that was segregated. I really didn't know what that big word meant when I was a little kid, but I knew that I was surrounded by people who looked like me, who, you know, had lips like mine and cheeks like mine, and people who spoke the same kind of, you know, musical language that I did. And I also knew that every Saturday I had a different experience, because my parents would take us, you know, me and my sisters, to the town square, and we'd go shopping. And all of the shops at that time were run by white storekeepers. And, you know, the treatment that we got there was really remarkably different than anything that I experienced in my community. So I experienced what hatred and bigotry and segregation was all about, but I didn't have the language to describe it. But I did know that even as a little girl, Donna, I wanted to, you know, really make it impossible for other people to belittle you or to put you down or dismiss you simply because of the color of your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made that promise to myself when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And now, you know, thankfully I'm able to work with other people through a lot of training and a lot of hard knocks experience of my own, as well as, you know, education and really good training, solid training in this area, to work with people to build bridges across our isms, you know, racism, sexism, genderism, whatever it happens to be, ageism,
mm-hmm.
and to build bridges rather than letting those artificial constructs divide us.
I agree. Your father had a very profound experience with a man, Mr. Faulkner.
Share
how that had an impact on your dad, your family, and you and your thinking.
Well, you know, this was one of those life-changing moments in my family. My father was also born in rural Mississippi in the 1930s, Donna, and he was the kind of person who, no matter what you looked like on the outside, he would talk to you. You know, it didn't matter what color you were. And he dreamt big, and he dreamed outside of the box, and he dreamt about going to college. He dreamt about living in a house with running water. He dreamt about making his life different. You know, 5, 6 years old, and he just, you know, kept putting his dream out there, kept putting it out there. And as a young man, now 21, married with 3 kids, he was working as a janitor at Ole Miss. This is when it was still segregated, but he could work there. And he was still talking about this dream of going to college and living in a house with running water. Well, somebody took notice of my father. You know, he was very studious. He would read the newspaper, anything he could get his hands on. And they struck up a conversation with him. My father told him his story, his dream, and, you know, that person was instrumental in putting my dad in touch with the dean of Ole Miss. And then that person put my dad in touch with William Faulkner, who lived in Oxford, Mississippi at the time. And Faulkner heard my dad's story and said, you know, Mr. McEwen, I want to help you with your dream. Ended up making my father one of those offers that you can't refuse, right? Well, my father actually refused his generosity, and he said, I can't really accept your offer to pay my college tuition or, you know, all of the things that you're promising me, because I don't earn enough money to ever be able to pay you back. And Mr. Faulkner said, I don't expect you to pay me back. What I ask of you is that you pass this blessing on to other people when you're able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gift, if you will, with no strings attached, changed the story of my family. You know, my father was able to go to college. He graduated from college. And as a result, you know, I was able to go to college and get the kind of background and training that I have right now. And that legacy, if you will, has just made a huge deposit in my life. And, you know, makes all the difference in the kind of work that I do with young people, with children, with adults, and with elders. Yeah.
Now, you and your book have so many wonderful statements and comments. You talk about passion and signature presence.
Yes.
What does that mean to you?
Well, signature presence really is about the unique qualities, skills, talents, gifts that we bring to anything that we do, to our work, to our relationships, to how we live our life. And so when I think about signature presence, you know, we all have a unique fingerprint. We all have a unique footprint. We all have a unique voice print. We also have a unique way of showing up in the world and bringing our gifts forward. You know, so you and I may both be authors, right? But you have a different way of writing about stuff than I do, because your life story is different. The, you know, the things, the lenses that you look through are different. The relationships you've had are different. And so they color whatever writing you might do or speaking that you might do. And so signature presence is really that unique quality about us that really sets us apart from any other of the 6 billion people on the planet. And bringing our passion forward through our signature presence is really what my work is all about. You know, each and every one of us has something that we value so much that you know, when we talk about it, when we share that passion with other people, we just kind of, you know, our light shines. And so that's what I'm talking about when I talk about passion. Some of us are lucky enough, Donna, that we get to express our passion and our work and our, you know, and earn a livelihood from it. But not all of us are so lucky. You know, about 85% of the people in our country work in jobs, you know, just to pay the rent, just to get the mortgage paid. And they have no, you know, great desire to do more than the 9-to-5, right? But there are some of us who are really fortunate enough to bring that passion and the work together. But what I tell people is it doesn't matter if you can bring your passion to work. You can bring your passion as a human being to the workplace. You can bring your passion as a human being to your relationships, you know, whether they're with family members or, you know, somebody at the grocery store. And you can bring that attitude, that positive glow, that spirit about you wherever you go.
That is the truth. You speak of a woman in your book, and correct me if I'm mispronouncing her name, Masai. And she absolutely has done something phenomenal in Kenya. There are so many areas in Africa that are just traumatized. And it breaks your heart to hear about it, but it just absolutely lifts your soul when you hear about people that say, I'm going to be what I'm going to be, regardless of what's going on around me. Tell us her story.
Well, Wangari Maathai is the person that you're talking about, and she is just, you know, she's one of my sheroes. She began her, I'm going to say, her passionate work over 30 years ago outside of the little village where she was born in Kenya. And she recognized after she had gone away to school to get her doctorate in Europe and the United States, she had gone back to her home village, and realize that things were different there than they were when she was a little girl. What she experienced there was a clear running water, a stream, you know, trees and animals, things nearby that you could enjoy, the beauty, plants that you could harvest. And when she returned, she realized that, you know, the water, the stream that she knew as a young girl had dried up. The forest had been cut down. The animals that were, you know, abundant were no longer there. And that the women in the village had to walk many, many, many miles a day, 5-6 miles a day to get fresh water. And sometimes, you know, they would walk for the water, but it wouldn't be fresh. And mm-hmm. then they'd have to, you know, make the return trip home. So, you know, 10-12 mile journey, just to fetch water. And, she made a vow to herself that she wanted to refresh the community, if you will, refresh her village, and she began planting trees, one tree at a time. She also realized that by teaching other women to plant trees, that she would give them a sense of their own self-worth, if you will, and their own power to rebuild a culture that had been devastated. And, you know, she now, 30 years later, looks back on this very humble beginning and says, you know, I didn't think anybody was watching. Well, now she's known as the mother of the Green Belt Movement. You know, in 2004, she won the Nobel Peace Prize for her work. And so what began as a very small, humble act of reforesting her community is now a worldwide movement. And so that's the power of passion. You know, mm-hmm. that's the power that it can, you know, really transform the lives of many women, not only in Kenya, but now all over Africa and around the world.
And it has helped on so many levels. So many, yeah. many levels. It's
many,
not just
many
environmentally,
levels.
Psychologically, an awareness that you can do something, that there are those choices out there. Because so many times when our world is barren, or we perceive it as barren, and we're involved in the drudgery of everyday life, we will get sucked into a vacuum where we just are like robots. We're not even aware of options.
We're not aware of our surroundings. We're not aware of our options. We kind of, you know, live our life on autopilot. And, you know, I was just at a conference yesterday, miles away from Africa, miles away from planting trees, and I was speaking to a bunch of executives who work in the public sector there in school, in our educational system. And these are the people who work in the back office, so they're in charge of the accounting, the budgeting, the transportation, you know, the things that, not the glamorous stuff, but the behind-the-scenes stuff. And they had asked me to come in to speak with them about, you know, what do you do when your back is against the wall? You've been asked year after year to do more with less. I mean, you know the drill. You know, this is the song that goes on in our organizations, in our corporations, in our public and private sectors. And my work with them was to really help them realize that they don't have to accept the deadening environment as their only reality. They can bring their vitality. They can bring their creativity. They can bring, you know, whatever human resource that they can to breathe life into their work and into their job. And so we spent, you know, half a day just kind of reconnecting with why they chose this profession in the first place, mm-hmm. and how to get their groove back, if you will. And I, you know, I just have to say that to a person, there were probably several hundred people, you know, in the various sessions that I led. They just walked out of there smiling and vibrant and really reconnected with their own sense of who they were and their own sense of creativity.
I think that is so vital. I am so weary of listening to the bashing and so much stuff that is just put out there by I don't know how many portions of media. And it just, I think, wait a minute, we've got challenges right now. Let's use the innovative part of ourselves.
Yes.
Let's throw away the paradigms. You don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Just Change the bathwater, for heaven's sake. Use a different soap. Let's get some new bubbles floating around here.
Yeah.
Let's clean up the act. And that leads me into your chapter that you have in your book on honoring integrity and honesty. And I think too often people feel that they have to give that up, that this is something, well, you can't be honest. You just have to cover up certain things. But, you know, sometimes it's okay to walk away. I know of a gentleman that did exactly that. He was in an environment. He said, look, folks, I'm going to tell you what I see and how it is, and I want you to also know if it doesn't fit with you, it's okay. I can walk out the door because I choose not to be in an environment where these kind of games are going on. And it shocked everybody.
And, you know, I think that there are actually a lot of people in our culture who are able to do that, to take a stand and to even, you know, say, I'm not going to put up with this, and be the only one saying that and be able to walk away. I think that, you know, the stories that we hear about people who take advantage of the system, who, you know, do an in-run, pardon the pun,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, those stories are true and they're significant, but I think that really represents a pretty small portion of the people in our culture. You know, I've been known to walk away from jobs where I needed the money, but when people treat me poorly, or they treat me as if I'm invisible, and I've had, you know, a lot of that in my life and my career, I'm just, you know, I just take the stand that I don't have to put up with this. And if you are so blind and so out of it, if you will, that you will treat another human being in this way, I don't have to put up with this. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I pack my bags and I move on.
Well, and I think it shows standard and example. And I realize there's a lot of people that are not going to be able to do that. And maybe they have to do something else until they find their own light where they can honor that. But usually it takes someone giving an example that says this is no longer acceptable, and then all of a sudden others, and you don't have to be horrifically violent. You don't have to go out and create awesome negative situations where people are destroying this or destroying that. That's childish. All you have to do is say, okay, let's see how we can work things differently, and then get about the business of doing it. It's
get
a real challenge.
Get about the business of doing it, and I realize that, you know, I'm the bandit that you just described, Donna, and, you know, my actions are probably pretty radical and pretty unique. Not everyone can take that kind of stand and
mm-hmm.
hang on to themselves, and not everyone, certainly most people, cannot afford to just walk away from a job. You know, I couldn't either, but I, you know, the pain of staying with people who treated me poorly was greater than the loss of my income, and everybody has to decide, you know, what their push point is, if you will. But there are lots of ways to take a stand and still stay connected to the work environment, for example, you know, and just, you know, chip away at the things that you can chip away at. You know, you don't have to take on the world. You don't have to take on the entire organization, but you can take a stand for what you believe in. And, you know, by doing that, you slowly influence some of the people around you,
mm-hmm.
and the people around you that you, you know, don't influence, you probably aren't going to have a hope of changing them anyway or influencing them anyway. But do what you can with what you have wherever you are.
And it works. And that means that you maintain integrity with yourself. I think of one gentleman who was working in an environment where his superior was of a mindset that there were no rules. He didn't have any sense of ethics. And he pushed this individual to a point where they said, well, I'm going to do this behind your back. And he just had a confrontation, the employee did,
mm-hmm.
with the boss and said, look, you've hired me to do this job. This is what I'm going to do. Get out of the way. And the guy was so surprised because nobody had ever talked to him that way.
He said, if you want
to fire me, you can fire me. I will not violate my integrity. I will
mm-hmm.
not do this. I'm mm-hmm. hired to do this job. I will do it. Now get out of my way. It was a fascinating phenomena, and the old tiger got out of the way, and everybody stood around and said, my.
You know, I love that story because, when one person is able to do that, it shows other people that something can be done. You know, mm-hmm. whether or not they have the particular courage to do what that gentleman did or not, it shows other people that something can shift if you just, you know, stick your neck out a little bit. You know, like you said, not everybody can do that, but I think it's worth taking the risk. And, you know, my message is take the risk that's right for you, and it's different for everyone.
You have a quote by Frederick and Marianne Broussat, and it reads as follows: take good care of the best that is in you. Mm. Self-exploration and personal growth continue throughout our lifetimes and equip us to tend to the needs of others. And I really like that combination of words because, and we're coming sort of full circle here, if you cannot take care of yourself, if you do not honor your own truth, mm-hmm. then you're not going to be able to really help other people by example or by action because you cannot demonstrate what you don't believe.
We can't demonstrate what we believe, and, you know, taking good care of yourself is, I'm just going to say, one of the best healthcare policies mm-hmm. that you can take on. We do ourselves harm, and we do other people harm when we don't take time for self-care, when we don't take that time out of time to renew ourselves. And, you know, I'm in what we call the helping profession. There's so many people in this work, you know, consultants, coaches, doctors, nurses, therapists, teachers are, you know, we're all in the helping professions, clergy. And we do ourselves, our congregations, our communities, our patients, our clients harm when we don't step back and take care of ourselves. Nobody else is going to do it for us. And, mm-hmm. You know, our job is to step it up and really to pay attention to slowing down, to feeding our soul so that we have something of quality to give back to other people.
I agree. I also like something that you have in your book. It reads, "It doesn't matter to me that you have a past. I want to know if you'll celebrate your present, if you'll take a stand, declare yourself, sing, I am, boldly and with rejoicing, not only to the stars at night, but to anyone, anywhere, without apologies or regrets." I think your book is a powerhouse, and I think you, not only are you a superb writer, but I think that so much of the message that you give is just very soul-nourishing as well as mind- and emotionally-nourishing. And I just would love to know if you have a website that people can go to find out more about you, what you're doing, how to get there to where your soul on the outside. I know it's all in the major bookstores. But there, you've written some other very well acknowledged materials.
Yes, thank you. I do have a website, Donna, and it's www.gloriaburgess.com. You can get my book anywhere books are sold, Amazon.com or any of the bookstores. And the quote that you just read is from a poem that I include in my book, my latest book called Dare to Wear Your Soul on the Outside. And people ask me all the time, you know, where does that come from? What does it mean? Well, that phrase is actually in that poem that you just quoted from. And it really means to let your light shine, to don't, you know, not to worry about the baggage of your past, but to live fully in the present and to help other people do the same thing. So to be of service to other people.
Absolutely. And I think if we're wise, we'll understand that whatever dramas we've had in the past, that gives us a palette of colors to work with and to communicate with that otherwise would have no power to it. Because,
well, you know,
you can't talk about what you haven't experienced.
What you haven't experienced, and that is so true. You know, I lived my life for almost 20 years believing the garbage that other people told me about myself. You know, you're no good, you won't ever amount to anything. All of those hateful, mean, ugly things. And I also lived my life kind of in, you know, with one foot on one side of the fence and one foot on the other, also believing the things that my parents poured into me, and the, you know, the people in my community, the elders in my community, that, you know, I was going to amount to something, that I could be anything I wanted to be. So I had these dual messages, and thankfully, you know, the positive messages won out. I have to say this to your listeners, and that is, you can make the change in your life. If you've lived with a harsh program, you know, you will never amount to anything, you're not good enough, whatever that happens to be, you can re-envision your life and reimagine your life and leave all of that past old baggage behind. It won't happen overnight, but it can happen. I know, because I've lived through it.
I understand. Well, Gloria, it has been a delight having you as a guest. Her wonderful book is Dare to Wear Your Soul on the Outside. Live Your Legacy Now. It makes for wonderful reading if you're going through difficult times, if you know of someone that feels like they have hit a brick wall that's 5 miles deep. This is a book that will touch their heart, their mind, their spirit, encourage thinking. But more than anything else, it'll make you aware that you do have a unique legacy of your own that you can leave. But it's up to you to discover it. Gloria, thank you for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I know we've got a caller on the line. The telephone number is 888-815-9756. Let's go to the telephone lines. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Tricia. I'm calling from Canada.
Where in Canada, Trish?
Oh, Quebec.
In Quebec. One day, yes. I hope to see that beautiful part of the country. It is
it's
just
raining
gorgeous.
Today.
Oh, well, we've got sunshine here. I mean, this causes any brain fog to disappear in the Pacific Northwest because we have so many gray skies. You know, when the sun comes out, we all go a little bit dingy because, you know, the mold and fungus starts to dry out. Anyway, let's get down to business with you, Tricia. The first thing I'm looking at is a lot of work. It appears to me that very recently you have made a decision to really concentrate and focus on getting certain things done. It's as if you have a batch of clutter and you're saying, I have got to get rid of this. And you are making a determination that is going to enable you to get a lot done. But that focus is enabling you also, as you're prioritizing, it's enabling you to really put things into a perspective that you had not been able to do for a while because you had so many things pulling on you. So I think these next 2 to 3 months, you're not only going to get a lot done, but you're going to have a great deal of clarity. I also think that there's going to be some interesting challenges in front of you when it comes to negotiating with someone about some money. I don't know what this is related to right at the moment, but I am seeing an issue of money, and you must be willing to negotiate. And someone may want to do the kibitzin with the conversation, and I don't want you to be intimidated by that. Pretend you're an Arab.
Kibitzin.
Yeah, that's just going back and forth. Kibitzin is small talk. And it is that patterning of sort of like, okay, it's $500 today. No, well, I saw the advertisement. It was $400. No, we'll make it $450. You know, going back and forth, this type of thing. And all you need to do is have a clear picture in your mind about what it is that you want to accomplish and what it is that you have to work with and then take care of it. And I think it's just dealing with the numbers, looking at things in the right way, and you're going to be able to get exactly what you expect to get. But you have to be willing to go back and forth in conversation and not take it personally because this is business. And so that is something that's a learning curve for you.
Yes.
Because you would take it very personally if someone said, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then you have to say, wait a minute, we're not talking, there's no personal stuff here. We're talking business. And that's what you just are going to learn, and it's really going to help you quite a bit. So I think you're going to find that as this year evolves, you're becoming much more savvy about how to work with money and not being afraid to say, no, this isn't acceptable, and it's okay, I can walk from this. And someone's going, wait a minute, that's not what I expected out of you. So there's a lot you're learning, and I want you to have confidence in yourself. I'd also like to encourage you, because of this particular situation I'm looking at, I'd like to encourage you to go to your local library or your local bookstore and pick up any books on negotiation you possibly can, because I think you're going to find that there's many different issues coming up during the next 5 years where you're going to want to do negotiating. And you need to be comfortable with it so that it's not something that makes you so upset. You feel a wreck. And you just need to make it okay. Nothing personal. This is business.
Huh. That's very interesting.
What would you like to ask me, Trish?
I am an emotional person. I know that. But recently I had a parent actually try to tell me what to do in my classroom today. And I had this, I have this little girl. She's really emotionally disturbed, and she does not want to do the work, you know. That's fine. So I asked her, you know, I asked the secretary, you know, she has to leave the classroom. Because she tried, she did hit me, and she did try to physically harm me. Not so bad, but... So now I have to write this all down, and then I had the parent tell me off in front of my whole class.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept my cool, but...
Good for you.
This woman, I kept my cool, and I said, please don't say this in front of my classroom, you know. And my kids were like, oh, cat fight, and I said, no. And then she left, and she got really emotional, and now I have to write a letter of a complaint. I don't know. I'm a little weary about that because I don't want to rock the boat.
Well, I think you need to do it. I think what you're going to need to do is understand that you have a situation here that is coming from an emotional center, a mother who honestly does not know what to do with the child. The child is in need of some real, strong, stable environment. And there are some issues here that if the child is, you know, beating up on you in front of the other kids, this is not acceptable behavior. And this is something that's not a good example. I mean, just look at the response of your students saying, oh, goody, goody, we've got a cat fight here. And I think you were very wise in the way that you handled it. And you know that the mother is very upset with herself because she leaves the room and she ends up in tears. So what's happening is that you're feeling sorry for the mother. However, you're not doing any favors to the mother by feeling sorry for her. She needs help. The whole family needs help. And the reality is that if the school system doesn't have some counselors that can work with this, then the mother needs to find another venue. So as a teacher, you need to write up exactly what happened. You also need to ask your class, how old are the kids you're working with?
About 9, 10 years old.
Okay. You are not dealing with itsy-bitsy ones. You're dealing with kids that are looking at what's going on around them. And I would present a project to the students and say, we have a situation, and you observed what went on, and I'd like to know how you feel about it. And I'd have the kids write out what they felt about what they saw. And what would they think would be a good solution? Get them involved in a thinking process. Why was it a good thing or was it a bad thing? How could it have been done differently? And I think it's good to get the feedback from the kids because you're going to put in a complaint. This is something, the mother's behavior was very inappropriate. The child's behavior is inappropriate. And there's help that's needed here. But that's not your job. You're the teacher. But if you go and you, just a thought, and you talk with the kids and say, I've got a project for you. I want to know how you feel about such and such. And I want you to write it down for me. And don't make it a long, drawn-out thing.
No.
And then just say, okay, I want to know how you feel about this. And maybe you just have an open conversation. But I'd like to, I think it'd be good to have some kind of documentation so that the kids
I wrote everything down.
Well, not just your documentation. I'm talking about the kids in the classroom.
Oh, okay.
And maybe have a little bit of role playing where maybe they would pretend to be the teacher. And what would they, how would they respond if they were the teacher? Or how would they respond if someone said something like that to them? What would they do? And I'm just giving you these ideas and thoughts because it's important for kids to be able to learn to think through why certain behaviors are appropriate and certain ones are not.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're having to learn it.
I'm a first-year teacher.
Excuse me?
I'm a first-year teacher, but I've been going through a lot with this
woman.
Oh,
you always will. I don't know of any teacher, any good teacher, that doesn't go through it. Because it's just a part of life. Kids are always going to challenge. Parents are always going to challenge.
Yeah, and she works there, so she told me, she goes, well, my kid is not going to do this. And she started trying to tell my class, my whole class, what to do. And I was like, I had to stop her and say, hey, not in front of my class, please.
And I think that was appropriate, and she knew it was appropriate. So you do need to write the complaint. Don't run from this.
Okay, good, because I'm so
scared.
The
reason I say don't run from it is that if you run from this at this time, you'll run from other situations, and then you'll get angry with yourself.
That's true.
And you want to be an example for your students.
Yeah.
But you need to encourage the kids to think about this, too.
I will. That's true.
And it's a good exercise, because if they learn that there's other ways that they can do things, then they'll think it through. But if it's accepted that screaming behavior, being rude, being, foul-mouthed, whatever, is acceptable, the kids, they're pretty sharp. Don't underestimate them.
Mm.
And ask them how they'd resolve it. And some of them may say, well, I think I'd hit them in the head with a baseball bat. I mean, you'll have some of them come up with some real interesting solutions. You'll go, well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that would be appropriate? Well, no, but I sure would like to, I sure would like to do it. You say, well, okay, I understand that. But that is inappropriate. And why would it be inappropriate? Well, send somebody to the hospital maybe. Do you see what I'm getting to?
Yeah.
And kids will be amazing. You will have some that will come up with some real good ideas. Real good ideas. I think of a story I just read not too long ago about Gandhi. There was some kind of a conference, a political grouping, and hundreds of people were in the audience. And this one person that was against everything that Gandhi represented, he was just just absolutely tearing him apart. And he just sat there very quietly. And when it came time for Gandhi to speak, he said, thank you. And he sat down. That's all he said. And the whole audience got it. So there are times, though, that you do have to take a stand, dear, and I think this is it.
Yeah.
It's all part of that negotiating stuff I was mentioning. Wasn't about money, but it's about something else.
That's true.
I have to go on break, dear. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you. No problem. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Hey, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. 582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. And if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call into. I wanted to let you know tomorrow we're going to be talking about cryptozoology. Dina Budd is going to be my guest. And, well, okay, I'll tell you what cryptozoology is. It's about werewolves, dragons, skyfish, lizard men, and other weird creatures. Real ones. And some that have mysteries about them. So we're going to have fun tomorrow. We're going to be talking about some real interesting subject matter. Well, talking about different creatures, I had to chuckle when I came across some information about various animals and things that have occurred with them. And I know that those of you who listen to the show really love your animals. Well, being a Scottish Terrier fan, I found this story about a Scotty, Cymbeline. Now, Scotties are very independent little critters. So you can imagine that
this particular Scotty was not very happy when he found that his jaws were glued together after he put his teeth into a dinner menu. Now, what happened is that he had been trained to pick up mail from the doormat of his home in Essex, England, and to take it to his owner. However, the high-gloss paper menu ended up gluing this little Scotty's jaws shut for a half an hour until a veterinarian managed to free the gum that was on the menu, the glue, so they had to remove it from his teeth so he could move his jaw again. I mean, it's amazing what animals will go through. And then in Turkey, there's a walrus that's learned how to play the saxophone. Her name is Sarah, and she grips the instrument between her flippers and blows out series of notes. So just when you think you've heard it all or seen it all, well, let me tell you, there's a kickboxing terrier. Now, this one I didn't find hard to believe at all, knowing terriers like I do. There's a Russian black terrier. His name is Ringo Czar, and he has been trained to kickbox. And his owner, who is a former martial arts champion, his owner's name is Russ Williams, he's from North Wales, has been training his dog to jump up on command and to kick at a punching bag with his front legs. He says while many dogs bite people, his dog will be the first one to knock out a human with his paws. And then last but not least, swans. Would you expect that swans could cause problems? They're so beautiful. I just love to look at them. Well, apparently they did in East Sussex, England. There's a lot that goes on in Sussex. Well, apparently police held up traffic and roads were closed around the town in June of 2008 because there was a whole family of swans that went on a three-hour walkabout. Now, apparently back in 1576, there was an act that was passed. It was called the Act for Swans. And when that was put on the books of law, no one could touch the birds as they legally belong to the Queen of England. So swans could have their walkabout, and traffic just had to do its own stuff. Donna Seabolt here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, I do want to remind those of you who are listening, if you have a special story, if it is relating to the paranormal, I would love to hear it. I'm putting together a book, and in this book, I'm wanting to have a collection of 100 paranormal tales to share with other people. And I think that if you've got one, you send it to me via email, we'll get your contact information, and we'll tuck it away. It's going into a file along with a lot of others. So far, I've got close to 30. And I'm looking forward to yours if you have one to share. So it can be about ghosts, it can be about animal communication, near-death experience, whatever the special happening was for you. I'd love to hear about it. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. There was a 13-year-old girl whose name was Amy who was, as she was growing up, really struggling with a lot of what we'd call identity issues. Now, she was Korean, and she had been adopted when she was a baby, and she had no information about or any idea about her birth mother. Now, she loved her adopted family. They had never tried to hide this information from her, and she began to talk about what it would be like for her real mother to be in her life. Now, you can imagine that would have been a bit of a challenge to her adopted mother because this was her daughter as far as she was concerned. Well, during this time when she's growing up, in her early teens, and that's always a hormones start raging and we just do all kinds of wacky things when we're teenagers. Well, Amy's dentist at that time told her mother and her father that she really needed to have braces. Well, on the day her braces were fitted, Amy went home from the dentist's office, and she was in a lot of pain.
And as the day wore on, she became more and more uncomfortable, and by the time she had to go to bed, she was utterly, utterly miserable. Now, the doctor knew she was going to have discomfort, so gave her mother the medication she needed, and her mom got it out, and then told her daughter, said, I want you to come up into my lap in my rocking chair, just like you did when you were a little girl. And she just rocked Amy. Amy was in such misery. And as her mother was rocking her and stroking Amy's hair, Amy began to relax, and the medicine started to kick in, and she began to feel a little better. And she was almost asleep when she said to her mother in a drowsy voice, I know who my real mom is. And her mother said, you do? She said, yes. She's the one who takes away the hurting. That's a very special story about love. Mother's Day is coming up this Sunday, and I know you're going to have a good time wherever you are. Tomorrow, we're talking about cryptozoology. Dina Budd, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take care. God bless. We'll be back here, same time, same place, talking about the mysterious. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.